breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, Warburg from the low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you as we're going to be joined in segment number two by one of our good friends as we're going to be chatting a little baseball with Matt Josephs. You know him better as Mid-Major Matt, does great work over at ESPN Radio in Richmond, the Prop Queen website and podcast as well. We're going to be chatting with him a little bit about what we're seeing in terms of the prop front, some of the teams that he's feeling bullish/bearish on, and we're going to be previewing the games for Friday in the final segment. Going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Friday as we touch them all. Also with Matt, by the way, we'll throw this in here as well. We're going to be chatting about why some of these teams are out of playoff contention can actually make you some money here in the back half of the season as well, so be on the lookout for that. And here in the first segment, we're going to recap everything that we saw in baseball on Thursday. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larsium, name does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter/X questions today, everything is powered by EdgeBoost. EdgeBoost is making sure that bettors are able to have access to their funds whenever and wherever they want. With EdgeBoost, they make sure that 100% of gambling transactions do get approved. And when you go to EdgeBoost.bet, utilize that promo code of Greg, G-R-E-G. That'll give you a dollar-for-dollar match on your first deposit up to $25. Now let's take a look back at everything that we saw in baseball on Thursday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The Rangers and Royals have been two of your better under teams in all baseball, but things did get a little bit overwhelming on Thursday, much of that due to the pitching situation. 6-4, the Royals get the job done for Texas. 56 overs, 71 unders, and 2 pushes, and for the Royals, 55 overs, 71 unders, and 2 pushes for Patrick Corbin. Got carved up like a turkey, giving up 4 runs in 3 2/3 innings as he does allow a home run to Nick Lofton. 4th home run season, Vinny Pascantino off of Jacob Webb would get his 26th home run season. Webb gives up that solo run in 1 3rd innings. Luis Curvelo gives up a run in 1 3rd innings. Danny Kaloum pair routes out the bullpen scoreless, and Robert Garcia is scoreless inning. And for the Rangers, they go 3 of 15 with men in scoring position as they had their opportunities against Michael Lorenzen, who gives up 9 hits in 4 1/3 innings, allows 4 runs, only 3 of which were earned. He was hurt by a Bobby Witt error out there in the field, but bullpen from there was on lockdown. Daniel Lynch, John Schreiber combined for a scoreless inning. Anel Zerpa, 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Taylor Clark and Carlos Acevedo, both able to give you a scoreless inning. For the Milwaukee Brewers, they do lose a series for the first time in an eon against the Cubs, but they polish it off with a 4-1 win on Thursday. As for the Brew Crew, Quinn Priester, not long for this game. 5 walks allowed in 4 1/3 innings, but only allows 1 run, and then from there, the bullpen went to work. Nick Mears, pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Grant Anderson, Jared Koenig, Abner Uribe, Trevor McGill, they all turn a scoreless setting, and Bryce Terang off of Shota Imanaga, 14th home run season. Imanaga lost 2 runs in 7 innings. He did his part. Ryan Brazier from there gives up 2 runs in an inning, and Drew Pomeranz a scoreless inning, but not a lot doing for the Cubs at the plate. A lot doing for the LA Dodgers. So after they were embarrassed on Wednesday by the Colorado Rockies, they atoned for that. 9-5 the final is for the LA Dodgers. You had Clayton Kershaw rocking and rolling this one. 5 2/3 innings, 3 runs allowed at Coors. Not a bad start. You had from there Matt Sauer give up 2 runs in his 2 innings of work and did allow a home run going deep for the Colorado Rockies. It was Brenton Doyle's 13th home run of the campaign, and for the Colorado Rockies, they were unable to get to Ben Kasperis and out of the bullpen scoreless, and Alex Vesia a scoreless inning, and for the LA Dodgers, a pair of home runs as off of Mr. Nick Anderson, Andy Paz gets his 21st home run season, and Chase Dolander, well, he was chasing this start very early as it was Freddie Freeman getting his 16th home run season. Dolander, 7 runs allowed in 3 2/3 innings. From there, you would have Anderson give up that home run as he goes 2 1/3 innings, allowing that solo home run, and then you would have Luis Peralta and Juan Mejia combined for 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Duggan Darnell from there, he would give up a run in 1 1/3 innings. And you also had the Minnesota Twins getting lambasted by the Athletics. The Athletics now 33-33 away from home, and they're 11 games below 500 at home. One of the biggest oddities that you'll find, that's what happens when you've got a team out there in Sacramento in a minor league ballpark. 8-3 the final is for the Athletics. Jack Perkins gives up 2 runs over the course of 5 innings from their Ben Bowden. A squirrel setting as Waldo Beto in long relief gets a save, a 3-inning save, giving up 1 run. And Nick Kurtz off of Michael Tonkin gets his 26th home run season. Tonkin gives up 2 runs in 1 2/3 innings, but damage was really done by Jose Ureña, who's on his 4th team this season, but this was the first loss that he took all season, so I thought that was quite hilarious. Gives up 6 runs over the course of 5 innings. Erasmo Ramirez farts out the bullpen squirrels, and Brooks Krisky, he comes in for a scoreless inning. The Washington Nationals, they take it to the New York Mets by a count of 9-3. And for the Mets, less than savory, sub-500 record on the road. And I mean, this has been a big issue for them. And for the Mets, if you want to dive a little bit further into this, 26-36 on the road thus far this season. And obviously, you're going to have home and road splits regardless of what sport you play. But that has to be a little bit concerning here for the New York Mets, as Sean Manea, he was able to give you a relatively okay start, but he really wore down late. For Mr. Manea, he gives up 4 runs over the course of 4 2/3 innings, most of it coming late, as he does give up a trio of runs in the 5th inning. From there, Tyler Rogers, he comes in for an inning, giving up a run. Brooks Raley did not go off the Raleys. He was able to give you 1 3rd inning scoreless, but Ryan Santa continues to be awful. He gives up 4 runs in an inning, including a home run to James Wood, who gave you good Wood. 26th home run season for the Mets. Pair of home runs in this one off of Mackenzie Gore. Francisco Lindor, 25th home run of the campaign, and Starling Marte of the Marte Parte, he gets his 7th home run of the campaign, as Gore does get quite gored. He gives up 3 runs in 4 1/3 innings, but a bullpen that has been much maligned and has been pretty awful thus far this season, they come up big. Jose Ferrer, Cole Henry, they combine for 2 scoreless innings. You had PJ Poulin and Clayton Beter both give you a scoreless inning, and Jackson Rutledge, pair of outs out of the bullpen, scoreless as well for the Tampa Bay Rays. Their struggles really do continue. They have won less than 35% of their last 30 games, as they fall to the St. Louis Cardinals in this one, this by a count of 7-4, as Joe Boyle had entered in, giving up 1 run in 15 innings at home. Well, gave up much more than that here. He gives up 6 runs, 5 of which were earned over the course of 4 innings, and then you would have Wilson Contreras go deep for his 18th home run of the season off of Brian Baker. Baker gives up a home run in his inning work. Mason Montgomery, Garrett Clevenger, both on a scoreless inning along with Enyu Seta, along with Mason Englert, they will both give you a scoreless inning as well. And then for the St. Louis Cardinals, Sonny Gray, not great, but he was good enough to be able to get the job done. He gives up 3 runs over the course of 5 innings, including a home run going deep for the Tampa Bay Rays. Yandy Diaz, 21st home run of the campaign. Kyle Lee, he gives up a run in an inning. Matt Svanson, a scoreless inning, and Jojo Romero, 2 scoreless innings. And for the Tampa Bay Rays, 10 men left on base in this one, so that was not amazing for them. For the Baltimore Orioles, they've really been one of your best road under teams in all of baseball, but at home, things have been a little bit more overwhelming for them. In a lot of places, this one turned out to be a push, as for the Astros, they get the job done by a count of 7-2. As a matter of fact, for Baltimore, 31 overs, 28 unders, and 2 pushes when they've been at home this far this season. And after it was a really nice start for Brandon Young last time out against the Astros, no such magic in this one. 7 runs allowed in 5 1/3 innings, including a pair of bombs. Chris Walker, 17th home run season, and Yenny Urdias, 18th home run season. Jason Alexander, no relation to one Mr. George Costanza, gives up 2 runs over the course of 5 1/3 innings, as it was home run number season and of the career for Dylan Beavers. So the Beaver was able to chuck him up. That said, you had Steven Okert give you 5 outs out of the bullpen, scoreless. Caleb Ort, Brian King, they both landed a scoreless inning. And for the Orioles, bullpen was solid, as Grant Wolfram, 2 scoreless innings. Corbin Martin, a scoreless inning. And Yarmil Hidalgo was able to come in for a pair of outs out of the bullpen, scoreless as well. And then you did see the slam Diego Padres slam down the San Francisco Giants, this by a count of 8-4, as for the Giants, Justin Verlander just completely torched. 7 runs allowed in 4 1/3 innings. Matt Gage, he gives up a run in 2/3 of an inning. You did have from there Spencer Bivens give you a scoreless inning, and 2 scoreless innings out of Yo Piguero in his MLB debut. For Dylan Cease was not sharp in this one. He lost a pair of home runs. Rafael Devers, 25th home run in the campaign. Willy Adames, his 20th, gives up 4 runs in 5 innings, but bullpen from there, which is number one in the big leagues in terms of ERA, they did their part. Mason Miller, pair of outs out of the bullpen squirrels. Adrian Morejon, Robert Suarez, both turn a scoreless inning, and Jeremiah Estrada, he was able to give you 4 outs out of the bullpen squirrels. And the Boston Red Sox, they were able to take it to the New York Yankees, and they win the oldest rivalry in baseball, this by a count of 6-3. As for the Red Sox, they win this game despite the fact that they went 3 of 19 with men in scoring position with 14 men left on base. Roman Anthony in the 9th inning off of Yuri De Los Santos, 5th home run in the campaign. Luis Gil gives up 2 runs, one of which was earned in 5 innings. Very adventurous. He gave up 5 walks along the way, and there were 4 errors out there in the field by the Yankees, including one of Gil's own. From there, Camilo Duvall gives up a run in 1/3 inning. Mark Leiter Bader Jr. Bravats out the bullpen squirrels. Luke Weaver gives up a run in two-thirds of the inning. And then Tim Hill, he gives you a scoreless inning. And Yuri De Los Santos gives up that home run in the ninth inning, but two unearned runs as it's hurt by Ben Rice, I believe it was, throwing errors. There were so many, I lost track. But for Lucas Giolito, he gives up three runs in four and two-thirds innings. Was taken deep by Mr. Rice, 20th home run season. But from there, the bullpen rocks solid. Steven Matz, Bravats out the bullpen squirrels. Greg Weisert, four outs out the bullpen squirrels. Justin Wilson, an out scoreless. And Garrett Woodlock, Aroldis Chapman. They're both able to turn a scoreless inning. And if you're taking a look at trend-wise, what we're getting in baseball right now, over the last 7 days, things have been quite overwhelming. 48 overs to 38 unders, as I believe that we only got one under straight up in baseball on Thursday, and you had one push depending upon your number in the Astros versus the Orioles game. So 48 and 38 to the over in the last 7 days. Favorites sitting at about 56% in the side span, 52 and 41 on the money line overall for the season. Favorites sitting at about 56.8%, 1,073 and 817. Meanwhile, overall for the season, unders are still hitting at 51.5%, 939 unders to 886 overs. So that's where we're seeing in baseball right now, and that's where we're all getting trend-wise. Coming up next, how about if we do chat with our good friend Matt Joseph, aka Mid-Major Matt, about the teams that are out of the playoffs that might be able to spot you a little bit of money. You want to be taking a look at some of the teams that are getting hot and cold in baseball. He's got you covered there, and we're going to be taking a look at the games for Friday. That's on the flip side right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got our good friend, Mid-Major Matt. Matt Joseph's aboard. He does such great work in a wide variety of stops. He's doing a great job looking at college football this time of year. He does a tremendous job over with the show Border Border with ESPN Radio out there in Richmond. He's doing a great job with the Prop Queen website and the Prop Queen podcast as well. Ariel Epstein doing some tremendous work over there. And you're able to follow him on the old Twitter/X at Mid-Major Matt. And Matt, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me, Matt. And Matt, we're now in a very exciting time in baseball, a little bit more than a month away from the conclusion of the regular season. And are there just a few teams in general that you're feeling bullish/bearish on? And is this a time where you start taking a look at the futures market a little bit more? Or is this more of a time where you're looking a bit more game to game on these teams that you're bullish on?
I mean, I think, you know, there actually is occasionally some value on the bad teams when they get hot. It's one of those things where I feel like down the stretch, a lot of the bad teams who know they're not going to make the playoffs, they kind of just play it out and they're done. But you certainly have these teams that would know they're not going to make the playoffs, but then start getting a little bit of momentum. Case in point, look at the Colorado Rockies and what they've done, you know, in that series against the Dodgers. You look at the Athletics, who obviously are trying to save my season win total over bet by playing some of their best baseball. So I find sometimes that the teams that aren't playing the best and have no postseason future, when they're going well, they're going really well. And when they're not going very well, they are a very easy team to fade.
And I think that's so interesting that you bring that up, because I've talked about this a little bit recently. The Baltimore Orioles seem to be playing some great baseball. Ever since they called up Trevor Rogers, they've been above a 500 team. Obviously, we know that they had high expectations and they have fallen way short of them. They are not going to be able to bail out your win total overs with that regard. But I look at the Orioles as perhaps being a game-to-game bet-on team and a team that could play a little bit of a spoiler out there in the American League.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you have the teams that suddenly realize as good as they were supposed to be. I mean, the Orioles, you know, should be fighting for first place. And unfortunately, with the injuries and, well, the poor free agent choices, they kind of doomed themselves a little bit early on. But there's always something about playing for momentum. Playing for your new manager, seeing if you want to keep him or not, and things like that. So, yeah, the Orioles are certainly a team that you want to look at, and you kind of notice a little bit when it comes to their K-props in terms of that they're starting to make more contact. They've become a little bit more of an under team when, for the large part of the season, they were an over team, and so that kind of goes along with them starting to play some better baseball.
Oh, no doubt about it. And it's something that you do love to see. These teams that they're not giving up on the season. They're still fighting hard. And I mean, when it comes to the front office, they need them to fight hard because this has been a less than tremendous season for them. I'm with you. I disagree with some of the moves that they made in the offseason, but certainly they're still playing for a little bit of momentum going into next season. And they've got a lot of young guys trying to prove themselves, as Matt Josephs, aka Mid-Major Matt, joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And then one other team to take a look at as well, the Miami Marlins. Are they a team that you might be looking at a little bit more as well? Because they DFA'd our guy, Cal Quantrill. That was a little bit unfortunate, but they just seem like one of those pesky teams looking to be able to build a little bit with that great pitching staff, and a team that in general, ever since the beginning of the month of June, they've been a little bit pesky too.
My question for the Marlins is, with so many young guys and so many guys who have not played full MLB seasons, do they lose steam in September? Maybe in the middle of September? Like, is there all of a sudden, like, they may play some good baseball and then all of a sudden at one point the bottom just drops out and then they just, you know, get tired and everything? It's great to have young players and you love that, you know, the September call-ups are always good for these teams, but you always have to wonder, these teams that are exclusively young for the most part, like, do they start losing their way and do they see the finish line in terms of it's been a bad season, there is no postseason? Do they start playing out like it's, you know, I'm about 15 games away from vacation, I'm about 15 games away from the offseason? That's my one concern with the Marlins. So they may continue to play well as of late, but there's going to be a point where just everything kind of flips, because I think a lot of these young guys are just going to run out of gas.
Yeah, but I think that that's such a great point that you bring up as well, because there are some of these young teams that they're really fighting for momentum. They're looking to be able to play for 2026 and beyond. And then there are some of these other teams that they're like, hey, it's going to be fall break. We've got a tee time set up for the day after the end of the regular season. So I do think that that's very well said, and there's both ends of the coin there. And then when it comes to the games that we've got for Friday, we've got a lot of interesting ones, including one where I know you were talking about the Rockies getting a little bit hot. They take a pair of games from the LA Dodgers, but now you've got Blake Snell coming off the injured list, looking solid in his last few starts against the Padres and Yu Darvish. Big one out there in the NL Central with the Dodgers, about a -125 favorite and the total of 8. How do you look at this one, especially a guy in Blake Snell where with his K props, he either goes way over or he goes way under, because if he lacks command, his pitch count gets way up. He knocks himself out of starts early, but when he's on, he's on.
Yeah, much like Ariel, I don't love the rematches, the quick turnarounds, because unless you have extreme splits, it's very hard for the first result to happen for the second result. I always go to, you know, when you have these younger pitchers, they may do really well the first time around, but what happens the second time around? Like, I'll be interested to see what Alexander does for Houston against Baltimore, because this is the second straight time that he's seen them. He pitched really well the first time, or at least struck out a lot the first time, you know, and Brandon Young too, for that matter. But like, I'll be interested to see, you know, Yu Darvish has a 7.66 ERA away. He's 3.52 at home. So it, for me, when these rematches come about, it's always about who makes the better adjustments and who is the pitcher who can adjust to their settings better. So this is the kind of game that I wouldn't look at as much because of the rematch. You know, when you look, you know, San Diego's a team that had a rough series in LA, and you know they're going to want to play better, but Blake Snell only had 3 strikeouts in 6 innings in that game. I don't know if he's going to do that, and the other thing that's going to happen here is the books are going to adjust based off that game, so maybe there almost is some value on the over. But then again, as you said, I'm always scared about Blake Snell because he's got that 6 or 7 walk outing, like, sitting there lurking behind.
Yep, with Blake Snell, it feels like it becomes a little bit all or nothing with him, and it's what I alluded to earlier. Sometimes he does knock himself out of a start a little bit early, so that's a bit of a concern. And this is a game where we don't have a lot of numbers up on the board, but you got the Milwaukee Brewers who were able to get back online on Thursday, getting the job done against the Cubs after they dropped that double dip. They've got Jose Quintana going up against Carson Wisenhunt, who Wisenhunt actually has a respectable 5 ERA, but he's given up 5 home runs and 14 in the third innings. Right now, that opener shows the Brewers right around about a -160, total of 8.5. Anything that you might look to do in this game with a guy in Quintana's pitch of contact and a guy in Wisenhunt who's a little bit young, a little bit inexperienced, going against a Brewers team that has been quite hot?
Yeah, and when you look at the youngster for the San Francisco Giants, you know, he's had 3 starts so far. He had 5 against the Nats, 4 against the Mets, and 3 against the Pirates, so naturally he probably will have 6 in this one. But when you look against Milwaukee's been a really tough team to figure out. They've had a lot of unders lately in terms of strikeout props against lefties, but then you had, you know, Abbott had 7, Imanaga had 8 back on July 30th. So it's really interesting. Does it take a full time through the order to get used to the lefty? And then on the other side of things, like Quintana, as you mentioned, he's a guy that goes longer in games, but doesn't necessarily strike a lot of guys out. The Giants are the type of team that make you work. They love to make the pitchers work. Last couple of times, you know, J.P. Sears went 6 innings. Cortez, the second time, went 5 2/3. The first time he went 4 2/3. Gore went six innings. So I'll be interested to see what the outs number is potentially for Quintana. That's the only way I would probably look at an over here. The Giants do strike out a little bit more against lefties, but Quintana is a guy that pitches the contact. So I probably won't look at his K prop here, but maybe his outs. He's starting to get hot here. 6 1/3, 6 6 innings, his last three starts.
Yep, he certainly has been hot with that regard. And I do think that this is going to be a fun one to look at with a guy in Wisenhundu. I think that he might be giving up some runs here with the way that he has been giving up the deep ball thus far this season. And we were talking about teams that might be out of the playoff race that are starting to get hot. One of those teams I mentioned before is the Orioles with Cade Povich going against Lance McCullers Jr. It's a total of 9 with the Orioles right around -115 to -125 favorites. How do you look at this one? Because Povich has had a really rough season, especially at home. And Lance McCullers Jr., he's been on the injured list, he's been off the injured list, and whenever he's pitched, he has been less than effective too.
Yeah, Povich has an over 6 ERA at home and over 6 ERA at night. That doesn't work out. And then he just faced these Astros as a bulk guy. So my question is, are we going to get the Rico Garcia, Dietrich Enns going to start type of thing, and then Povich is going to come in afterwards? Povich didn't pitch bad in Houston. 10 strikeouts in 5 innings. He did give up the 3 earned runs and 5 hits. So my question is, can he make adjustments? Can the Astros make adjustments against him the second time around? So that's always something as we get another one of those rematches. And I was looking real quickly. He has not had one of those back-to-backs against the same opponents to kind of take a look at how he's adjusted there. And then Lance McCullers, we always talk about when it comes to the guys coming off the IL, you always have to look when it comes to the rehab starts. He's made 1 rehab start. He went 5 innings in that game, had 5 strikeouts. He, much like Blake Snell, is a guy that I'm very worried about when it comes to taking strikeout overs, because he has those fits where he just walks a lot of guys. You know, case in point, I'm looking at his last 5 starts. He had 4 walks in 3 of those starts. So it's a guy that has tremendous stuff, but half the time doesn't know where it's going. So combine that with the fact that he's only had 1 rehab start, I might look at an outs under. Problem is, the books won't put out outs for guys that are coming off the IL because they're afraid if they put it too low, he might go over. And if they put it too high, he might go under. So unless the manager says anything, the only thing I might look at here is a McCullers outs under, with the Orioles starting to hit a little bit better right now.
Yep, and the Orioles have been a much better team at hitting when they have been at home rather than away from home. Away from home, they actually like dead last in the American League, and at home, they've been able to supply nearly 5 runs per game. Big reason why I personally took the over in this game as well. So we're sort of sitting there thinking the same thing here. And here's a young guy that I've really liked this year. Ryan Burchard has been rock solid both with the Padres and the Royals. Right now with the Royals, they're about a +135 and +145 underdog against Detroit. It's a total of 8.5. Want to get your thoughts here, and if you've been playing any of Burchard this far this season, because I feel like even though he gives up a few more walks than what you'd like, he's really a young pitcher I think can develop into something very, very good in the next few years.
Yeah, he's a guy that they've been hanging a lot of 15.5 outs numbers, and he's been going over them slightly. 5 1/3 against the White Sox, 5 2/3 against the Twins, 5 2/3 against the Red Sox. He is an intriguing guy, and I feel like the Royals are stretching him out a little bit more because the Padres just refused to let him go over 5 innings. He did it once with San Diego. It's almost like they had a magic number in mind. Now, he does have a little bit of a walk issue at times. He's had 4 walks a couple of times this season. He's had 3 walks a couple times this season. So, like, his control issues have been a little bit of a problem. But I like what he's going to do, and he's a guy that I'll probably buy going forward. Going up against the Tigers, who do strike out a little bit more, I will be interested to see what Burgert's number is in this situation. We're looking at, you know, Hunter Brown had 6, Arrigetti had 5, Zebby Matthews had 6 the second time around seeing them in 2 weeks. So I'll be interested to see what Burgert's strikeout number is, and of course his outs number as well. And then you look at Casey Mize. You know, Casey Mize is an interesting guy. It feels like he either gets a lot of strikeouts and doesn't pitch as well, or he gets less strikeouts and pitches better. But last time out, 10 strikeouts in Minnesota, but gave up 4 earned runs and 4 hits and 6 1/3 innings. He's a guy that's so all over the place, and this is a Royals team that loves to make contact. He had 4 strikeouts in KC back in May. He had 3 strikeouts at home against KC. I don't think I'm going to get a high enough number here, but if it's 4.5, I'm probably looking under on Casey Mize's strikeouts.
Yep, and with Casey Mize, he has been a guy that's been pitching to a little bit more contact this year. Goodness, this he does face off against the Kansas City Royals team that, man, it's been rough with their offense all season long, as well as we do have Matt Joseph, aka Mid-Major Matt, joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And is there anything else that you're looking at in terms of slate for Friday? As we do this, we do have a few games that are off the board, and we've got a lot of young pitchers out there, like Nolan McLean is going to be making another start for the Mets, Cade Cavalli for the Washington Nationals, Luis Morales for the Athletics. So there's a lot of young guys out there that should have some interesting K-props. Anything that is really standing out to you for this Friday?
Well, I'll talk about Braxton Ashcraft, the reliever for the Pirates, who they've slowly turned into a starter. I've actually won something in both of his starts so far, and neither of them have gone very long. Ashcraft going up against the Reds had 5 strikeouts and 3 1/3. It was like a 2.5 number, so that was an easy victory. And then his earned runs allowed was 2.5 against the Cubs, and the wind was blowing in. He gave up 1 run and 3 hits in 5 innings. He's getting a Rockies team leaving Coors Field in Pittsburgh. So I'll be very interested to see what Braxton Ashcraft's numbers are. He's pitching better, so I'm going to continue to take advantage of it. Of course, we get another rematch in the Nats-Phillies game. Will Cade Cavalli look really good against the Phillies the second time around? Will Taijuan Walker continue to pitch well? It is a rematch, and so certainly I'll be interested to see how the young pitcher handles his second time facing a team straight through. And then, of course, you know, we have to talk about Bieber. Shane Bieber is returning for the Toronto Blue Jays, and he's had a fascinating offseason in terms of his rehab starts. He's made 6 rehab starts since July, and his last rehab start, he went 7 innings. And so that makes me think like he's going to be able to go a decent distance against the Miami Marlins here. Now, it's a road game, but it's not exactly going to be like this intimidating atmosphere. But I'll be interested, because if the books hang a number too low, thinking, oh, well, he's just coming off of the IL, he's not going to go deep, I think Shane Bieber can. Now, I'm certainly worried about that first start for him coming off the IL, but like, I'll definitely be interested in that. And then, of course, the last thing I want to tell people is, because I've seen a lot of people on Twitter, they think because the White Sox are really bad that they strike out a lot. I'll tell you this. I was perfect in the Braves series predicting the White Sox K-props, because I had the under on Strider, I had the under on Elder, and I had the over on Hurst and Waldrep. So I feel like I've done pretty well with the White Sox this year. They've gone under their K-prop 57 times against righties and 37 times over. So that is a almost 2-to-1 here when it comes to overs and unders against right-handed starting pitchers for the Chicago White Sox. So I'll be fascinated to see what Zebby Matthews' number is. If it's too low, I might go over because the nastier pitchers do well against the White Sox. But if it's too high, I might look at the under, because this is a Chicago team that makes a lot of contact. And I think people just look at their record and they're like, oh, this team's not very good, let's just take their K-prop over against them. That is not the case. So when I post on Twitter that I love the White Sox, it's because I've kind of figured out right now, and I'm in a decent zone when it comes to their K-props.
Yep, and with the White Sox, the big thing is they do need to do a little bit of a better job in terms of the hard contact that they've been getting, but they have been having a lot of contact, and Lenin Sosa, he's been able to do a very nice job. No relation to Lenin Kravitz, but that said, you've got a guy in Matt who does such an incredible job on so many different fronts. Matt, I know that you're dialed in with regards to college football season. We've got, I hate the phrase week zero, but opening week in college football coming up here on Saturday. You're doing a tremendous job getting set for the college basketball season. You do great work over at ESPN Radio in Richmond. You do great work with Ariel Epstein and so much more. So love to get people at home know it's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, at Mid-Major Matt on Twitter, I post all my plays. It's tracked on the Action Network app, so therefore nobody can say I'm cheating or anything like that. And certainly I'm willing to answer any questions that you get, because I know people ask you about first threes, first fives, player props, any of that sort of thing. So certainly I'm willing to answer those questions. And yes, with week zero coming up, or the first week of the college football season, very excited for that. Every once in a while, there's a little bit of value. I probably won't have a huge card, but I'll have one or two plays in week zero. And as you said, college basketball, the non-conference schedules are coming out. So that's always a lot of fun. We definitely talk about that on my radio show here in Richmond. But we all have the same goal. We all want to beat the books. So certainly tweet me with any questions and I'll see if I can help.
Absolutely. And Matt, he's doing such an incredible job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. And every single time he joins me, learn such great insights. So big thanks to Matt for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Friday as we touch them all.
Yeah. breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Visa Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Matt Josephs, a.k.a. Mid-Major Matt. He does such an excellent job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball. Every single time he joins me, lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So a big thanks to Matt for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Friday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter / X feed at GUnit_81, and we are going to go in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games, any interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So how about if we start things off with 901-902 on the card? The Pittsburgh Pirates play with the Colorado Rockies. Antonio Senzatella is on the bump for the Rockies, and Braxton Ashcraft hopes to not be a load of Ashcraft for the Pirates. Pirates who find themselves between -180 to -194 favorites, between +158 to a +169. That number on the Rockies 8.5 is a total over and under anywhere between -105 to a -115. And you have to utilize the old FanDuel opener with regards to the run line. But if you're looking to lay a run half with the Pirates, you're going to be able to get that at +108. And I'd be willing to take that +106 or better was my buy point on this run line, as for Braxton Ashcraft began the season coming out of the bullpen. Now he's been converted into a starter and has been rock solid this far. Overall for the season, between being a bullpen relief piece and being a starter, a 3.02 ERA, 8 strikeouts at 2.8 walks per 9 innings. In his 2 starts, he went 8 1/3 innings, so not a ton of length, but only gave up 2 runs, relatively presentable against the Reds and Cubs, 2 teams that are right now above 500, and now he gets face off against the Colorado Rockies team that just has not been able to generate any offense away from home whatsoever. For this Colorado Rockies unit right now, they are averaging 3.05 runs per game away from home. That is dead last in the big leagues. And you do have Hunter Goodman, who's been able to supply 25 home runs, and 13 plus of them have been on the road this far this season. But you've got a lot of guys that see their numbers just completely nosedive when they're away from home. Like Mickey Moniak is hitting for less than a .260 on base when he's away from home, hitting above a .300 at home. Jordan Beck, .315 average at home. On the road, this goes down to a .223. These guys, when they go away from elevation, it just really messes with them. And now you're looking at Kyle Farmer, who's right now giving you a .278 on base. For Orlando Arcia has been hitting below the Bidot's line of .200. So you've had a lot of guys have had tons of issues for this team. And for the Colorado Rockies, it's not as if you're being backed up by some sort of amazing bullpen. 29th out of 30 teams with regards to bullpen ERA, Jimmy Erga, Victor Vodnik have been able to supply a sub-4 ERA, and Duggar Darnell has been able to do a relatively solid job with being able to supply a sub-4 ERA himself. But likes of Juan Mejia, Nick Anderson, these are guys rocking above a 4 ERA. On Elshavili has been a complete disaster. And for the Pirates, while this is not necessarily some sort of amazing bullpen with David Benar being traded away, you have had guys that have come in there. They've been able to hold down the fort. Dennis Santana, Isaac Madsen, both being able to give you a sub-350 ERA, though. Kyle Nicholas posting up over a 5 ERA. Colin Holderman, that's not been great. And for the Pirates, this has been a rough offense themselves. Only 3 guys on the roster with over 6 home runs this far this season. Andrew McCutchen, Brian Reynolds, O'Neill Cruz, and Cruz has dealt with a little bit of ailment over the last few weeks, and he, Alexander Canario, Jared Trollo, Jack Swinisky, Henry Davis, so many guys on this roster hitting a .210 or lower. But the good news is you get to face off against Antonio Senzatella, and Antonio Senzatella has been pretty much a human pinata this far this season, as he is rocking an ERA of a 7. He's giving up, in terms of hits per 9, 13.6 hits per 9 innings, 4.8 strikeouts per 9 innings, like leading 14 losses. I do think that the Pirates get to him relatively good here. Did semi tell it at 8.6, so like that over. And the run line of the Pirates, 903, 904 on the card. The Washington Nationals are on the road facing off against the Philadelphia Phillies. Tywan Walker goes for the Phillies, and Cade Cavalli goes for the Nationals, and the Nationals between plus 143 to plus 154 underdogs, and between minus 170 to minus 176. That number on the Phillies, 9.5 is the total. Under is minus 120, and the over is even. I set the Phillies money line at a minus 186. I was willing to take even money or better on the run line. Right now, I'm finding that at a plus 116, so sign me up there. Recognize that Taiwan Walker is doing for a little bit of regression. If you take a look at the ERA, I mean, it's a lot better than last year. Last year, he's posted up at 7.10 ERA, 3.34 this season, 4.73 fielding dependent, 1.4 home runs, 2.7 walks per nine innings. So that is going to be going downward sooner rather than later, but you know what, getting to face off against the Washington Nationals, that helps out a little bit. Though I will say, for the Washington Nationals, though they are averaging fewer than 4 runs per game at home, on the road closer about 4.6 runs per game. C.J. Abrams, I have no idea how and I have no idea why. 16 home runs this season, only 3 have come at home, so going away from home, that helps. They let Nathaniel Lowe go to the Boston Red Sox, but Josh Bell, ever since beginning of the month of July, is hitting above a .270. He's got 16 home runs. James Wood really hasn't given you too much post-All-Star break, but still move along. 350 on base, 25 home runs. I think he's just got one since the All-Star break, but now you've got Dylan Cruz back in the fold. Dallin Lyle is a young guy that has stepped up, hitting about a .260. Robert Hassel, along Brady House, these are young guys that they do need to step up a little bit more. And the big issue that you've got for this Washington Nationals team is bullpen. It is a disaster class. Right now, they trade away Kyle Finnegan at the trade deadline. And then you've got the likes of Clayton Beter, Orlando Ribalta, Jackson Rutledge, Connor Pilkington. All these guys rocking an ERA that is north of a 5. Now, for our good friend Cade Cavalli, it's been a little bit up and down from. He's had a few triumphs. He's had a few, shall we say, not triumphs in his starts as far this season, as this is going to be number 4 for him. He is overall posted up a .220 ERA, coming off of a start in his last time out against the Phillies, where he gave 7 scoreless innings, so he did give up 7 hits along the way. And his previous start against the Royals gave up 4 runs in 5 innings, and the Royals are dead last in the big leagues in terms of runs per game at home, so that's a little bit less than savory. 14 strikeouts in 16 and a third innings for Cavalli. And I mean, at the minor league level, it wasn't like he was necessarily lighting the world on fire. He was certainly far from being a scrub or anything like that, so I do think that there might be a little bit of upside here with Cade Cavalli. You take a look at what he was able to do at the AAA level this season. He was posting up an ERA that was closer to about a 5.35, 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, 3.61 walks per 9 innings, giving up 1 home run per 9. So, I mean, that told you that there was positivity to that ERA, but certainly was not necessarily giving you the world's greatest performances. And I do think that the Phillies are able to get to him with their lineup, especially with the fact that Bryce Harper has been able to start getting going once again. For Bryce Harper, north of 20 home runs, he's giving you over a 350 on base. That's big because Kyle Schwarber has really had to carry the mail for the team. He's up to 45 home runs, 375 on base, and you've got plenty of guys that are able to find a way on base for this Philadelphia Phillies team, obviously Harper being one of those guys. But then you've got JT Realmuto, Brandon Marsh, Alec Boehm, hitting between a .267 to .282. Nick Castellanos with a .291 on base. You expect a little bit more there, but 16 home runs out of him. And then for Trey Turner, he's done a nice job hitting for above a .300 with 31 stolen bases. So do think that the Phillies get to Cavalli here. I disappointed all 9.1. I actually do think that Taiwan Walker is going to be able to give you a presentable performance. So I'm in on the 9.5 under and the Phillies run line. 9.05, 9.06 on the card. The Mets are on the road against the Atlanta Braves. Joey Wentz hopes that have the New York Mets wincing in pain, and you've got Nolan McLean on the bump for the Metropolitans, and the Mets are in a relatively pick 'em game between minus 112 to a minus 106 is what you're going to be finding on them, and between minus 103 to minus 110 on the Atlanta Braves, with 8.5 being the total. The over is minus 115, the under is minus 105, and for the Mets, I set them at a minus 104 on the money line. So if we can get this down to like a minus 103, minus 102, I'd be looking there. And if you are looking to lay a run half with the New York Mets right now, that initial opener that I'm seeing on the run line, you'll find that at a plus 155. And I would be willing to dive in on that plus 155. That'd be my bare bones minimum. So in some form or capacity, I'm going to be looking at the Mets. I'm hoping that I'm able to get like a cheap pick-up money line here. So we shall see how that's going to progress overnight. But for Nolan McLean, looked really good and clean in his first start against the Seattle Mariners. Goes out there 5 1/3 innings, scoreless, and you take a look at what he was able to do at the minor league level. this season. He was a pretty darn solid pitcher. He was supposed to go up a 2.45 ERA, 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, 0.6 bombs allowed per 9, so he did a nice job in terms of not hurting himself. And Joey Wentz appears to have actually found a home with the Atlanta Braves, began his career as a starter for the Tigers, became a little bit of a journeyman these last few years, but I mean, in his 7 total appearances with the Atlanta Braves, 2.60 ERA, 8 strikeouts to 3 walks per 9 innings. Now, do I think he's doing for a little bit of regression? I do, but at the same time, if you're the Atlanta Braves, you're hoping for anything positive, and this has certainly been a positive, especially with a bullpen that is in the bottom half of the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. It has been a rough ordeal for Raisio Iglesias, rocking north of a 4 ERA, and then you've had Aaron Bummer living up to his name. He's been posting up an ERA, hovering right around a 4. Desbel Hernandez has been rock solid, though. You've had Dylan Lee be able to give you a sub-3.25 ERA, and then flip side for the New York Mets, you pick up Ryan Helsley, and that just has not panned out for the team. Tyler Rogers has been solid. Edwin Diaz, Reed Garrett, these guys are giving you a sub-3.25 ERA. And for the New York Mets, it has been a very top-heavy lineup, as you've got a quartet of guys, Pete Alonso, Juan Soto, Francisco Lindor, and Brandon Nimmo, who have all been able to give you at least 20 home runs this season. Soto's able to give you 385 on base. You could use a little bit more out of Mark Vientos. He's been coming around a little bit, but he, Brett Beatty, Cedric Mullins, all hitting a 240 or lower, a 301 on base or lower. Though Mullins has been able to give you 16-plus home runs this season. Tyrone Taylor has been rough at the plate, and the catcher spot has been a little bit up-down all around, but Francisco Lindor seems to be giving it a little bit more rough and tumble. And then for the Atlanta Braves, you've had Ronald Acuna Jr. return to the lineup. That's big. Over a 400 on base. He's been able to give you double-figure amount of homers. And then Marcell Ozuna and Matt Olson have been your main home run guys. A combined 39 home runs between these two guys. Both give you about a 365 on base. Michael Harris has all of a sudden picked it up. 16 home runs. Now the 277 on base is still less than savory. He's hitting a 257, so he's not giving you any walks whatsoever. And then you've got Ozzy Albies, 10 home runs, about a 300 on base. You just expect a little bit more there. And kind of Nick Allen, 0 home runs and hitting at 225. That's been rough to say the least. So do think that the Mets should be a very slight favorite in this one. It set them at a minus 104. It's some form of capacity, whether that be money line or run line, that'll be based on late night line movement. Could be taking a shot on the Mets. Made my total at an 8.7, so here at the 8.5, I'm also going to be in on this total over. It is 907, 908 on the betting board. You've got yourself the San Francisco Giants on the road against the Milwaukee Brewers. Jose Quintana is on the bump for the Brewers, and it is going to be the young gun for the San Francisco Giants, and one Mr. Carson Wisenhunt on the bump for them. And right now, the only place that I'm seeing an opener is over at FanDuel. The Brewers do find themselves as a pretty hefty size favorite here. Minus 164, plus 138 on the Giants with a total of 8.5. Offers at minus 120, and the under is at even. And if this is what we get market-wide, I will be willing to lay the Brewers on the run line. Even money or better, I was willing to take a shot there. And right now, I'm seeing that at plus 132. Now, for Jose Quintana, he is doing for some regression. 3.32 ERA, but a 4.59 fielding independent. Only getting 6.2 strikeouts at 3.2 walks allowed per 9 innings. But he has been able to keep the ball in the yard relatively well, about 1.2 home runs allowed per 9 innings, and he does face off against the San Francisco Giants lineup that, albeit they've been much better on the road rather than at home, last in the National League in terms of runs per game at home, with about 3.55 runs per game compared to about 4.5 runs per game away from home. But still, a bottom 6 lineup in terms of run production. You just have not been able to get out of Rafael Devers what you were hoping for. Over 50 games in the books, he's only been able to give the team now 9 home runs this far this season, supplying less than a 245 average, so that has been a little bit lackluster. And Jungle Lee has been able to pick it up a little bit for this team, but feels like it's a little bit too little too late. He's been hitting overall for the season about a 325 in terms of that on base. Eloy Ramos has been solid, 340 on base, 15 home runs. I like what I'm seeing there. Matt Chapman, he does have the 16 home runs, but he's only been able to at about a 229. He's been dealing with injury. He's back on the injured list, so that means that you're going to be seeing a little bit more Casey Schmidt moving forward. The bottom of the lineup with the catcher spot has been rough as well. And for the Giants, even though this team is currently number 2 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA, it is going to be expended quite a bit here, most likely with Wisenhunt. If you look at the raw ERA, it's not been overly bad for him. And his 3 starts, 14 and a third innings, 5.02 ERA. That fielding independent, though, is a 7.44, as he's allowed 5 home runs in 14 and a third innings. He's right now giving up about 4.5 walks per 9 innings, 7.5 punch-outs per 9, so I have massive concern there. It is a Giants bullpen that is a little bit gutted with trading trading away Tyler Rogers. You have Eric Miller on the injured list. They also trade away Camilo Duvall, so that means that Randy Rodriguez is your main guy, and now you're looking to mix and match with the likes of Carson Seymour, Ryan Walker, Spencer Bivens. These guys are posting up a north of 375 ERA, and for the Brewers, the team is number three in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, and it's not like they need a whole bunch of power to be able to generate their offense, as they've only got one healthy player right now who's been able to supply over 15 home runs this season. That'd be Christian Yelich, up to 26 bombs, but you just look up and down the boulevard, and all these guys give you at least a 325 on base. Caleb Durbin, Bryce Terang, Sal Frelick, Yelich, William Contreras, Isaac Collins is actually up to a 376 on base, so these guys have really been able to step up. Andrew Benisterio had himself a big series against the Reds about a week or so ago, as well for the Milwaukee Brewers. Even though Quintana is doing for a little bit of regression, this has been a top 8 unit in terms of bullpen ERA since the beginning of the month of June as well. Likes of Nick Meier, Shelby Miller, Ebner Uribe, Trevor McGill, all being able to give you a sub 3 ERA, should be able to set up well for them. So even money or better, looking at the Brewers on the run line, and did somebody tell 9.1? I think that they get to Wise and Arden Company, so I'm in on the over. 909, 910 on the card. The Reds are going to be on the road facing off against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Says one Mr. Ryan Nelson getting the start for them, and Zach Littell hopes to come up big for the Reds. Reds are between plus 112 to plus 122 underdogs, and between minus 130 to minus 137 is that number on Arizona, with a total of 9 over and under anywhere between minus 105 to minus 115, and plus 122 is my minimum buy point on the Reds. So plus 122 or higher, I'm going to be willing to buy in for Littell. He has been giving up a lot of hard contact. His home runs per nine rate is really a concern for him, because he's got a 3.52 ERA, but that fielding independent hovering more than neighborhood of 4.65. He only gives up 1.4 walks per nine innings, but allows a lot of general contact, 6.1 strikeouts, 1.6 home runs allowed per nine innings. But he's been much better with that recently. He's only given up one home run in his last four starts, a combined 6 runs allowed in those last four starts. So looks like he's been able to really hone in there. He faces off against an Arizona Diamondbacks lineup that is just not quite the same as they were at the beginning part of the season. You trade away and Eugenio Suarez, you trade away Josh Naylor, and you've got Gabriel Moreno on the injured list, so that means that you're relying upon Blaze Alexander to step up, and he's been able to give you over a 325 on base. Lourdes Gurriel sitting about a 250, he's giving you a little bit of pop. Geraldo Perdomo about a 375 on base, but just not the same team as they were towards the beginning part of the season. Corbin Carroll, 4 home runs in the last 10 games, that helps out the team quite a bit, but now you're looking at Adrian Del Castro having to step up for the team, and for the Arizona Diamondbacks, it has been a bullpen that has been not great, to say the least. You've got the likes of John Curtis with two S's, Juan Murillo, Jalen Beeks, Kyle Bacchus, Jake Woodford, all give you above a 4 ERA. Andrew Solfrank has actually been really good in this bullpen, but for the Cincinnati Reds, this is a pretty presentable bullpen of their own. I recognize that Graham Ashcraft hasn't necessarily been amazing, but I mean, he's been serviceable coming out of the injured list as a little bit of a long guy. Scott Barlow, Brent Suter, these are a pair of guys that are able to give you a sub 375 ERA. Tony Santian has been solid, and Emilio Pagan does give up the deep ball, but all in all, has been able to do a solid job. And then for the Reds, you've got Miguel Andujar hitting darn near 300 with Neovaldi Marte as well. TJ Friedel, Gavin Lux, not hitting for a ton of power, but both are above at 345 on base. Your main guy has obviously been Eli De La Cruz. He steals a bunch of bags, 19 home runs, 350 on base, but even Spencer Sierra has been able to give you a little bit of power as well. For the Reds, a slightly above average team with regards to that run production, and they go up against someone in Ryan Nelson who's been steady this season. He's not going to blow you away with the swing and miss stuff, but has been able to give you a sub 360 ERA with the way that he's just gone out there and hasn't hurt himself. He's only giving up one home run, 2.4 walks per nine innings to go along with about 8 strikeouts per nine innings, 376 fielding independent. But do think that in the end, the Reds having a little bit of better bullpen and Zach Littell starting to not give up the deep ball going to be just enough for the Reds to get the job done. So I did somebody tell 9.1 here, the 9, I'm in on the over along with the Reds at a plus 122 or better on that money line. 9-11, 9-12 on the card. The LA Dodgers are on the road against the San Diego Padres. Yu Darvish goes for the Pods, and Blake Snell is on the bump for the Dodgers. Dodgers are between minus 117 to minus 127 favorites. Between plus 104 to plus 108 is that number on the Padres. 8 is the total over and under, both at minus 110. And I did something I told you here at a 7.8, so I'm going to be willing to dive in on the under. Blake Snell in his first start off the injury list was what you typically expect out of Blake Snell in his first start off the injury list. Very, very rough, but ever since then, he's looking like the former Cy Young Award winner, and he's really been able to bear down for his team. His last two starts, a combined 11 innings, 13 strikeouts, zero runs allowed. You absolutely love to see that. And for Blake Snell, the walks are obviously a little bit of an issue. Five walks allowed in those two starts, but all in all, does a great job of just not allowing really any contact whatsoever. And for the San Diego Padres, this continues to be a bunch that hasn't been able to really supply the deep ball. Bottom seven team in the big leagues in terms of home runs on a per at-bat basis. Now, this is helped out by the fact that you bring in Ryan O'Hearn along with Ramon Laureano, pair of guys with above a 345 on base this season, and Laureano has really been able to pump out the deep ball, 19 home runs this season. You've obviously got Luis Reyes as a nice table setter, hitting for over a 285 for this unit. Manny Machado, Fernando Tatis Jr. have been your main two guys, and Machado started to heat up. He was able to get a home run in that series against the Giants, up to 21 bombs, 355 on base. Tatis has been stuck on 17 home runs for quite a while, but 375 on base. It's Xander Bogaerts since the beginning of the month of June. He's been able to above a 280 as well, but for the Padres, where the bread is really buttered for this team is actually in the bullpen. Number one in terms of bullpen area, so many guys like Audrey Morjon, Jeremiah Estrada, Jason Adam, these guys being able to give you a sub-3 ERA. David Morgan has been rock solid as well. Robert Suarez has been a little bit hit or miss along with Mason Miller, but these are two guys that are very good in terms of high-pressure situations, and I do think that for the LA Dodgers, that is the biggest fear with this team. The bullpen is not necessarily amazing, and sometimes with Blake Snell, he does jack up his pitch count and just have so many guys on the injury list. I mean, you've got Brock Stewart, Michael Kopech, Tanner Scott, Kirby Yates, all currently out of the fold, but and Alex Vesia, Jack Dreyer have been able to give you sub-325 ERA. You need Ben Cass Paris to pick it up, but now you're getting Blake Trinan back as well for the Dodgers. It is an issue that Max Muncy is on the injured list. When they were without him in the month of July, they were in the bottom half of the big leagues in terms of runs per game, and Shohei Ohtani is dealt with a little bit of injury, but should be probably good to go for this series, providing over 40 home runs, 380 on base. But you've got Teoscar Hernandez and Andy Páez, both give you 19 plus home runs. Páez has been really good in terms of hitting at 272 for this unit as well. Michael Conforto has had a disastrous season, but team picked up at the trade deadline. Alex Cull has been able to hit 275. He's been solid. Will Smith continues to get jiggy with it with a 4 under a base. And for Yu Darvish, it's just been a rough season for him in general. A career low in terms of the strikeouts per nine rate, hovering in that neighborhood about an 8.597 ERA. There should be a little bit of positivity doing for him. 4.57 fielding dependent, and he's been a little bit better recently. He has given up 300 runs or fewer in 3 out of his last 4 starts, but last time he faced off against the Dodgers, gave up 4 runs in 4 innings, including a pair of home runs, and we saw the Dodgers pretty much big brother the Padres in their last go-around as well, and I do think that Blake Snell is going to be dominant in a pitcher-friendly ballpark that he's very familiar with. So I did set my total at some point. I like the under, and for the Dodgers, one lay up to a -132 on that money line. 9-13, 9-14 on the card. It is the Boston Red Sox. They hit the road. They're facing off against the New York Yankees as Mad Max Fried goes for the Yanks. Brian Bayo goes for Boston. 8.5 is the total. Over is -115. Under is -105. For the Yankees, are between -157 to -172 favorites. +140 to +151 is that number on Boston. And at a +148 or higher, I'm going to be in on the Red Sox money line. For Brian Bayo, he's just been really good in mitigating hard contact and keeping things out in front of him this season. For Mr. Bayo, he has been really working that sinker ball to a 3.23 ERA, feeling dependent more on about a 4.31, but and he has given up 300 runs or fewer and now 5 out of his last 7 starts. He's been, overall for his career, very good in terms of just being able to mitigate hard contact, giving up 1 home run per 9 innings. And Max Fried is in a really rough stretch right now. He has given up at least 3 runs in each out of his last 7 starts, albeit there was a start against the Tampa Bay Rays where some of those runs were unearned, but we have seen big-time regression with him. The season numbers are still solid. 3.26 ERA, 3.20 fielding dependent, in that strikeouts per 9 innings, 2.2 walks, 0.8 home runs, a lot per 9 innings, but that's been a little bit gross. Now for the Boston Red Sox, what is gross is that Wilder Abreu, their main man in terms of hitting 20-plus home runs this season, he lands on the injury list, so that's a little bit less than savory, but you still have a top-to-bottom lineup that I really very much do believe in. Lots of guys hitting between about a 250 to a 263-ish. Trevor Story, Sedan Rafael, Jaron Durbin, and for Mr. Story, he's up to 19 home runs this season. Alex Bregman, he's been able to give you darn near a 380 on base. He's rocked 16 home runs in about 300 at-bats. Roman Anthony continues to give you a 400 on base as well for the New York Yankees. Obviously, Aaron Judge has been judge, jury, and executioner, 445 on base, 40 home runs, and then you do have just a ton of power in this lineup. As you had one guy in the Yankees lineup with below 15 15 home runs in that starting lineup yesterday, and that'd be Paul Goldschmidt, who's starting to move the line after he had a little bit of a rough go of it in June and July. Ben Rice has been able to supply 19 home runs. Trent Grisham, Cody Bellinger, Jazz Chisholm, all between 20 and 24 home runs. So Chisholm has been a little bit nervous in terms of zombies. Grisham has been able to give you about a 350 on base, but this is a team that they very much go hot and cold, and they're very much reliant upon the deep ball. And for the Boston Red Sox, they do have the better bullpen in this ordeal as well. Top six team in terms of their bullpen ERA, with having Aroldis Chapman being one of the best closers in all of baseball. But beyond that, Chris Martin, Brandon Bernardino, Greg Weiser, and a whole bunch of guys, they're giving you sub 325 ERA. And for the Yankees, Devin Williams has been a disaster class this season. Luke Weaver and David Benar, both a sub 3 ERA, they've been rock solid. But ever since Camilo Duval got to New York, he hasn't necessarily been that great himself. Fernando Cruz has hit the injured list, so that's a little bit of concern. And with the way that Max Fried has pitched recently, I do think that you've got some value here on the Red Sox. I did set them at a plus 147, so seeing that plus 150, I like the Red Sox on the money line. Do think that you get some run scoring here, so my total at 8.8, so I'm also in on this little over. 915, 916 on the card. The Houston Astros, they're facing off against the Baltimore Orioles. Cade Povich is on the bump for Baltimore, and Lance McCullers Jr. is on the bump for Houston. Houston is a underdog between even money to plus 105, minus 115 to minus 125. Then I'm around Baltimore with a total of 9. The over is minus 125, under is plus 105. I'm also seeing 9.5 out there. That under is minus 120, and the over is even money. Whether you've got a 9 or 9.5, I'm in on the over. I set my total at 9.6. Both of these pitchers have been rough this year. Cade Povich, overall for the season, 4.98 ERA, 1.3 home runs allowed per 9 innings. He's up over 3 walks per 9 as well, but that balloons up to a 6.05 ERA when he is at home, and 1.9 home runs allowed per 9 innings at home. And Lance McCullers Jr. just no command whatsoever. He's been in and out of the lineup because he missed 2 seasons due to injury. 6.90 ERA, 1.8 home runs, 5.9 walks allowed per 9 innings. But for the Houston Astros, the real advantage that they've got, even though Josh Hader is on the injury list and unlikely to return during the regular season, is that you've got so many guys in this bullpen, they're able to go out there and do their job. For these guys like Caleb Bort, Stephen Oker, Brian King, Brian Abreu, Bennett Sosa, all give you sub 325 ERA. That is big. And for the Baltimore Orioles, you don't have that. You've got the likes of a Grant Wolfram, who's posting up well above a 5 ERA. Corbin Martin, Yennier Cano, you just can't trust in these guys. Now for the Orioles, they have been one of your better hitting teams at home this far this season as on the road. They've been a complete disaster class, but nearly 5 runs per game at home, 3.76 runs per game away from home. They trade away a lot of pieces at the deadline, but you still do have 15 home runs apiece out of Gunnar Henderson, along Jackson Holliday, and Henderson has been able to about a 280 for this team. You've had Jordan Westberg step up, 15 home runs and less than 285 at-bats. He's hitting at 275 as well. Ryan Mountcastle, he's hitting for a little bit of average at 257, but less than a 300 on base, not a lot of power. Dylan Carlson, Kobe Mayo, these guys have not really developed for the team and for the Houston Astros. I recognize that it's been a little bit of a less than savory run for them. They do get swept in that series against the Detroit Tigers, but you've got Jose Altuve pumping out 22 home runs. Christian Walker, Yennier Diaz, they both need to do a better job with regards to their on-base percentage. Less than a 305 on base, but 16 and 17 home runs apiece. You've got Jeremy Peña who's now back in the fold. He's been able to hit above a 300 for this team. You've had Victor Caratini give you a double-figure amount of homers. He's been able to hit about a 260 as well. So I do think that both of these starting pitchers, they're going to be giving up some runs. Recognize that for the Astros, it's been a little bit less than tremendous for them at the plate, but I do think that in the end, the Astros should be a very slight favorite here, so I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the over. I set my total 9.6, so whether you've got a 9 or a 9.5, I'm going to be looking there. And then with the Astros, set them at a minus 114 on the money line, so I'm going to be willing to lay that. 9.17, 9.18 on the card. It is the Kansas City Royals, and they're going to be on the road facing off against the Detroit Tigers as Casey Mize is on the bump for the Tigres, and Ryan Burgert goes for the Royals, and the Royals do find themselves as a pretty good size underdog. They're between plus 134 to a plus 145, minus 153 to minus 164 is that number on Detroit. 8.5 is the total over and under, anywhere between minus 105 to a minus 115. And I'm going to be willing to take a shot here on that Royals money line. I did set them at a plus 143 for Ryan Burgert. He's had himself a relatively solid season. For Burgert, the 4 walks per 9 innings are a little bit of a concern, but at 275 ERA, he's been able to get about 8.5 strikeouts per 9 innings as well. He's also backed up by a bullpen that has been pretty solid, with Lucas Arcedge, Carlos Aceves both supplying a sub 3 ERA. They've been dealing with a few injuries, but now you get Daniel Lynch off the injured list. He's been able to give you a sub 3 ERA. Steven Cruz being on the injured list, that's been hurting them a little bit. But all in all, this has been a Royals team that's been 7th in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA, and for the Royals, a big concern that you've got is this offense. They've been a bottom five team in all baseball in terms of run production and runs per game, but you have been able to have some of these guys be able to step up. Vinny Pascantino has been able to hit above a 255 for this unit. He's up to 26 home runs now. You've got Salvador Perez, double figure bound former since the beginning of the month of July. He's been able to give you 22 bombs, still not give you a ton in terms of on base at a 293, but and he's been able to do a nice job move line. Got Bobby Witt Jr. above a 350 on base, 18 home runs, and then Mikel Garcia has been able to hit darn near 300 as he's got 22 stolen bases as well. Just have some of these guys with really a lack of pop. Jonathan India, you expect a little bit more than 8 home runs and him hitting a 235. John Rave, Nick Lofton, the young guys just have not been able to give you a whole heck of a lot. Jack Aglione is on the injured list, and honestly, that has not been a bad thing for this team. And Mike Yastrzemski, 3 leadoff home runs in the first 18 games with this team. That's pretty rock solid, so you do like that. And for the Detroit Tigers, this team is 19th in the big leagues in terms of runs per game since the All-Star break, so that's been a little bit of a concern, though. You do have consistent with this lineup. You've got two main mashers, Spencer Torkelson, 26 bombs, 335 on base, Riley Green, 29 home runs. He's been able to about a 260, and I mean, everyone other than Torkelson, it's between about a 259 to perhaps a 274 with Dylan Niggler hitting a 274, but Cole Keith, Javi Baez, Gary Carpenter was up to 22 home runs himself, Juancio Perez, Gleyber Torres, Zach McKinstry, all these guys doing a solid job there. Now for the Detroit Tigers, since the beginning of the month of June, this has been a bottom seven team with their bullpen ERA. Tommy Canley has been a disaster for this team. Chase Lee above a 4 ERA. May have been looking to Sawyer Gibson Long for a little bit of long relief. He hasn't necessarily been the answer there. They have been able to get a few okay outings out of Troy Milton, so that's been solid. And then Brian Erter, Will Vest, they both been able to give you about a 245 ERA, but it's been a little bit of an issue as well. And for Casey Mize, not necessarily a strikeout artist. He overall for the season has been very solid, though. He's getting about 8.3 strikeouts per nine innings. He's given up fewer than 2.5 walks per nine innings. Starting to give up the deep ball a little bit more with about 1.2 to 1.3 home runs per nine innings. Overall for the season, 363 ERA. Feeling dependent on a scotch higher, but relatively in line there. And when he's been at home, he's actually been giving up about 1.6, 1.7 home runs per nine innings. But I think that he holds down the fort against the Royals team that's been a little bit late inning. I did set the money line at a plus 143, so we'll take that plus 145 on the Royals, and I'm in on the under as I did sub-by total here at an 8.1. 919, 920 on the card. The Minnesota Twins are on the road against the Chicago White Sox. Aaron Civale is on the bump for the White Sox, and Zebby Matthews goes for Minnesota. Minnesota, minus 129 to minus 137 favorites, plus 112 to plus 122. That number on the Southsiders, 8.5 is the total, under is minus 115, over is minus 105. Could only set the Twins at a minus 111. I'm going to be willing to fire in on the White Sox. I know that our good friend Mid-Major Matt was talking about the fact that this White Sox team doesn't strike out a lot. Now that has not yielded a lot of run scoring, they're still in the bottom seven in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, mainly because they have a lack of power. Lennon Sosa has actually been great. 17 home runs, hitting a 270, and then you've got three guys that are between 13 and 14 home runs. Luis Robert, Ender Benintendi, Miguel Vargas. They're all hitting a 231 or worse with a 307 on base or worse. So you need a little bit more production there. Mike Talkman is moving line, give you about a 360 or so with regards to that on base, but you do have a cavalcade of different guys that just have not been able to step up for this team. Josh Rojas, Joshua Palacios, Michael A. Taylor, Robero, I mentioned before. We've got a lot of guys hitting a 220 or lower for this unit, and then on the other end, you do have a Minnesota Twins team that's just overall gutted from the trade deadline as they traded away the likes of Harrison Bader, Carlos Correa, and company. You still have Byron Buxton, who's been able to do a nice job supplying 25 home runs over a 335 on base. And then Trevor Larnach is up to 16 home runs as well. You've been able to get Ryan Jeffers to be able to move the line, give you about a 350 or so on base. Not necessarily a ton of power, but even though Cody Clements along with Matt Wallner have both been able to give you some power. Clements, 13 home runs, 16 out of Wallner. Both of these guys hitting a 215 or lower, so that's been a little bit less than savory. And for the Twins, this whole bullpen has been less than savory. Like, man, it is not great when you trade away the likes of Daniel Kloom along with Yoan Duran and company, because there was a clear divide between the haves and have-nots in this bullpen. Now they're going to be looking at Genesis Cabrera for some innings. You've got the likes of Cody Funderburk, Cole Sands, along with Pearson Yule, who's a little bit of a new long guy for the team. A lot of guys are posting up an ERA that is well above a 4, and for the Chicago White Sox, this actually hasn't been a terrible bullpen. Now in that series against the Atlanta Braves, they did look pretty terrible, but you know what? If you look overall for the season at the Chicago White Sox team, they've been posting up an ERA that's right around about 17th in the big leagues. So you do have a little bit of a divide with the likes of Brandon Iserte along with Jordan Leisure posting up an ERA above a 4, but some of these guys like Mike Fasil as a long guy has been able to give you a 250 ERA. You've had Steven Wilson along with Tyler Alexander both be able to give you a sub-3.45 ERA as well. The long guys have actually been pretty good in this bullpen. And for Zebby Matthews, he's actually been a really nice strikeout artist for the Minnesota Twins. And if you look at the advanced numbers, he is going for a lot of positivity. A 5.06 ERA, but feeling a pen is more around about a 3.59. Is giving up 1.5 home runs per nine innings, but nearly 12 strikeouts per nine innings. Has now given up 300 runs or fewer in four of his last five starts, but has he been able to deliver a lot of length along the way as well. And for Aaron Savalli, it's been a no good, very bad, terrible year for him. He gets traded for Andrew Vaughn, and of course the Brewers are looking like geniuses for that move. 4.88 ERA out of Aaron Savalli, but I mean, he has given up 300 runs or fewer in four of his last five starts, and he's went at least six innings in three of his last five as well. Just completely torpedoed by the nine-run start they had against the Cleveland Guardians, his former team, and overall for the season has a 4.45 fielding independent with only about 7.5 strikeouts per nine innings, but I think that he can do a serviceable job here, holding down the Minnesota Twins, getting a plus 112 or higher. I'm in on the White Sox on the money line, and I'm going to be in on the under semi total at 8.4. 921, 922 on the card. It is the Walker Texas Rangers playing against the Cleveland Guardians. Slade Sassone is on the bump for Cleveland, and Nathan Eovaldi goes for the Rangers. Rangers are between minus 160 to minus 172 favorites, plus 140 to plus 148. That number on Cleveland, and 7.5 is the total. Over is minus 115, and the under is minus 105. And for the Rangers, I set them on the money line at a minus 188. I was willing to take an even money price or better on the run line right now. That initial opener that I'm seeing is a plus 126, so sign me up there. For Nathan Eovaldi, if he were healthy for the entirety of the season, he'd be right there with Tarik Skubal for that American League Cy Young Award. He has been that good. Recognize that he's not necessarily getting as many strikeouts as Skubal, but an 8.8 strikeouts, a 1.5 walks per 9 innings, a 290 fielding independent, 176 ERA. The guy has been remarkable. Had a rough start against the Arizona Diamondbacks two starts ago, but I mean, other than that, he has been pretty flawless all season long, as I think that he's given up more than two runs in, I would like to say, three starts as far this season in terms of earned runs, because there have been a few starts where he's had unearned runs, but in terms of earned runs, three runs or fewer in all but two of them. So, he has been tremendous with that regard. And then on the other end for Slade Sassone, it's been a case where he's just given up a little bit too much hard contact for my liking. A 4.50 ERA with 1.7 home runs allowed per nine innings. The swing of his stuff has been diving a little bit as well. Four strikeouts or fewer in four of his last five starts. He's got a 4.85 fielding independent, and he's now given up at least three runs in each out of his last four starts. Now, for the Cleveland Guardians, this is not necessarily a fearsome lineup of their own. They're in the bottom eight in the big leagues in terms of runs per game, and they're just a very top-heavy lineup, as Jose Ramirez has been very rock-solid, posting up a 3.66 on base. He's up to 26 bombs this season. You've had Stephen Kwan at the top hitting about a 2.75, but then you've got a lot of guys that are hitting in that neighborhood. We're going to call it about a 2.25 to 2.35. Kyle Manzardo, Brian Rocchio, Daniel Schneeman, Carlos Santana, Ino Martinez, and then you have a drop-off with lengths of Bo Naylor, Jonathan Rodriguez, Austin Edge's backup catcher, David Fry, all in below the no sign of 200. Kyle Manzardo has been able to give you 21 home runs, so that helps. And for the Cleveland Guardians, since the beginning of the month of June, this team has been in the top six in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA, even with Emmanuel Clase on investigation. Got a lot of guys that are stepping up for this bullpen. Kate Smith, Eric Sabrowski, Nick Enright, Jacob Junis, all being able to supply a sub-3.15 ERA, and Junis is a relatively nice long inning guy. Kobe Allard, he's able to give you multiple innings. He's posting up a sub-3.20 ERA as well, but for the Texas Rangers, this has been a top 8 team with regards to bullpen ERA as well. Even with Robert Garcia having a little bit of a nosedive recently, you've had a lot of guys be able to step up, a lot of journeymen like Sean Armstrong, Hobie Milner, I know that he's on the injured list, but Chris Martin, these guys have been able to deliver a sub-3.25 ERA. They were able to mix and match with a bullpen game a few days ago to be able to preserve a lot of these bullpen pieces as well. And for the Rangers, overall for the season, they're in the bottom 7 in terms of runs per game, but since the beginning of the month of July, closer to about 4.7 runs per game. Corey Seager's really picked it up, 19 home runs out of 370 on base overall for the season. Then you've got Adolis Garcia, Marcus Semien, Wyatt Langford, all between 15 and 18 home runs this season, and for Langford up to about a 333 on base. The guy that's really been able to help ignite this offense, so Kyle Higashioka, since the beginning of the month of July, hitting well above a 325, so that's been solid. Jack Peterson continues to be miserable, but I mean, Evan Carter, he's been able to come off the injured list, give you about a 340 on base as well, so I do think that the Rangers take it to Sassone in the spot, semi-tail at 7.7, so at the 7.5, I'm in on the over, and pretty much anything of even money or better, in on the Rangers run line. 923, 924 on the card. It is the Seattle Mariners, a playoffs to the Athletics, as we know that it's going to be one Luis Morales on the bump for the Athletics. Right now, the betting board reads to be determined for the Seattle Mariners, so this game is off the board. It's looking like it should be Brian Wu. And if we do get Brian Wu going up against Luis Morales, I set the Mariners at a minus 194 on the money line. Pretty much even money or better, I'd be taking a shot on the run line and set a total of an 8.1. 8 or less, I'm in on the over, 8.5 higher, the under. Not going to go too deep on Brian Wu, and if you don't get Brian Wu and you get like a Logan Evans or something like that, that's probably a 45-cent drop-off right there. So I'd be going from like a minus 194 to probably more like a minus 145, somewhere in that neighborhood. But for Brian Wu, 302 ERA, 359 fielding independent. He's been giving up a little bit more of the deep ball with 1.3 home runs per 9 innings, but I mean, he's getting 9.1 punch outs per 9, 3 earned runs or fewer allowed in 4 out of his last 5 starts, and the strikeout stuff is very much back. 6 plus strikeouts in each out of his last 5 starts. Did give up 4 home runs in his last start against the Athletics, but that was in Sacramento where the runs are flowing like wine right now. And for Luis Morales, he's made 2 starts for the Athletics, has not been a lot of length. It combined 7 2/3 innings, 7 walks in those 7 2/3 innings, but only 1 run and 5 hits allowed with 9 strikeouts. So, I mean, he is very much a Rick the Wild Thing Vaughn sort of guy, and he is backed up by an Athletics bullpen that is currently in the bottom 5 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. You've had a pair of guys in terms of long guys be able to step up, as you've had Michael Kelly, Sean Newcomb be relatively solid, and Elvis Alvarado has given you a sub 4 ERA as well. But then the likes of Justin Turner, Ben Bowden, throw in there the new long guy, and Oswaldo Beto, Tyler Ferguson. These guys have not been great to say the least, man. We got a few injuries with this team. Jacob Wilson lands on the injured list, so that's been a little bit less than tremendous. But Darrell Hernandez has been able to give you about a 350 on base in a small sample size. Nick Kurtz continues to be solid. 26 home runs over a 375 on base. As a matter of fact, you've got a quartet of different guys for the Athletics who have been able to pound at least 23 home runs this season. Tyler Soderstrom is up to 23 bombs, hitting at 275. Brent Rooker, 25 home runs. He's hitting at 270. And then Shea Langeliers. Shea is banging 28 home runs with a 270 average as well. So the top half of the lineup has been great. The bottom half with some of these mix and match guys has been a little bit less than tremendous, but they've been able to get some good production there. And for the Seattle Mariners, obviously they play in one of the more pitcher-friendly ballparks in all of baseball. That's a big reason why you see some of the bigger home and road splits that you're going to find in all of baseball. 4.95 runs per game away from home, more like 4.1 runs per game at home. But big dumper Cal Raleigh, he has been dumping 47 home runs at a 355 on base on teams this season. Uyo Rodriguez, Randy Arozarena, 23 plus home runs apiece for Arozarena, up to about a 340 on base. You've had Rory Polanco be a little bit cold recently, still stuck on 18 home runs, but you've been able to have JP Crawford move the line, give you about a 360 on base for Eugenio Suarez, not necessarily hitting for a lot of average, but 37 plus home runs this season as well. And for the Seattle Mariners, top 10 team with regards to bullpen ERA, as you've got a really good top end of the bullpen. Matt Brash, Andres Munoz, Edward Bizzardo, Gabe Spire, these guys have all been able to give you a sub 275 ERA. So I do think that the Mariners deserve to be a rightful favorite with Wu on the bump. Even money or better, would be looking at Wu on the run line. Again, if you don't get Brian Wu, I'd probably be setting like a Logan Evans or something like that, more roundabout at minus 145 in this spot. So would need, if it is Wu, Luis Morales would be plus 195 or better to take a shot there. And then 8 or less to the over, 8.5 or higher to the under if it's Wu. If it's not Brian Wu, most likely 8.5 or less to the over, 9 or higher the under. 925, 926 on the board. It is the Blue Jays, and they're going to be on the road facing off against the Miami Marlins. We do know that Shane Bieber is going to have a fever for getting outs in his debut with the Toronto Blue Jays, and it is old to be determined on the bump for Miami, so this is a game that's off the board. Right now, the CBS projection is Ryan Gusto, and if you do get Ryan Gusto going up against Shane Bieber, I made the Blue Jays a minus 136 favorite, so we'll lay up to a minus 135 there, plus 137 or higher looking at the Marlins, and then 8 or less looking at the over, 8.5 or higher the under. If it's like a true bullpen game, I would probably move the Blue Jays being in that neighborhood about minus 140, minus 145, given the situation, then would be sticking with the 8 or less to the over, 8.5 or higher to the under. I know that Mid-Major Matt Joseph was talking about this a little bit earlier with Shane Bieber. Yes, this is going to be his first start of the season, and typically I love to fade guys coming off the injury list myself, but for Shane Bieber, he has been done right with regards to his rehab. 7 rehab starts dating back to his time when he was still with the Cleveland Guardians. He has been very rock solid in these rehab starts. 11.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, giving up only 0.9 walks per 9 innings. I recognize he's not given a ton of length, 29 innings across the 7 starts, but I mean, when he was pitching for Toronto at AAA Buffalo in his 3 starts there, 17 2/3 innings. So he could could legitimately go out there, give you six rock solid innings. And if you do get Ryan Gusso, it's been a little bit hot and cold for him. He began his season with the Astros, and even if he doesn't get the start in this game, he might be a long reliever. This will be his first start on the bump in about two or so weeks. 4.92 ERA, but he gets nine strikeouts for nine innings himself. 4.14 fielding independent. And if you don't get Gusto and you get some sort of bullpen game for the Miami Marlins, this has been a Miami Marlins bullpen that has not been great. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they've been amazing or anything like that, but if you look since the beginning of the month of June, they are number eight in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. You've had a lot of guys be able to step up for this team, like Lake Bacar, Anthony Bender, Ronnie Enriquez, Tyler Phillips, who've all been able to give you sub 350 ERA. The biggest thing for the Miami Marlins is that they've just had a tough time hitting at home. Right now at home, they're averaging about 3.9 runs per contest. That is third worst in the National League because it is very much a pitcher's ballpark. You've had Kyle Stowers be rock solid for the team with 25 plus home runs, but he now lands on the injury list. That's your main form of power. Now you've got Augustin Ramirez, who's been able to give you 18 home runs, but really outside of Augustin Ramirez, you don't have anyone else on the roster that gives you north of 11 home runs. Xavier Edwards has been solid at moving the line, hitting for about a 300. You've had Liam Hicks be able to give you about a 360 on base, and Roberto Hernandez is a guy that I like. He's hitting a 280 in a small sample size of about 55 games, 7 home runs and 160 at bats, so he's been able to step up, but obviously this team is not the same with Kyle Sowers currently being out of the lineup. And for the Toronto Blue Jays, this team had a really rough time being able to generate offense away from home to begin the season, but now they're picking it up. They're averaging well over 4 runs per game away from home, and you've got a trio of guys between 18 and 21 home runs. Edison Barger, Vlad Guerrero Jr., George Springer, and Springer and Vlad, both above a 380 on base. Don't call his name. Alejandro Kirk has been able to about a 295 for this unit. Bo Bichette, 16 home runs. He's sitting darn near 300 as well, so the team has become all the more fearsome. And Dalton Varsho is getting a home run every about 10 and a half at bats, only hitting a 230 with a 288 on base, but 13 home runs and 140 at bats. Love to see that. And Davis Schneider, he's been able to give you good production with 8 bombs and 135 at bats himself. And for the Blue Jays, this is a bullpen that has been right around about league average this season, but you've got the killer bees. Brandon Little along with Braden Fisher have been able to give you a sub 325 ERA. Uriel Rodriguez has been able to give you about a 320 ERA as well. Yimi Garcia being on the injury list for much of the season has hurt the team. And Louis Varland has had struggles since coming on over to Toronto, but still for the season supplying a sub 325 ERA. And Tommy Nance has been pretty rock solid as well. So if you do get Gusto against Shane Bieber, minus 135 or better, looking at the Blue Jays plus 137 or better, looking at the Marlins. And again, if you do get a bullpen game, something like that for the Marlins, closer to a plus 145 is what I need there. And bullpen game or Gusto, 8 or less to the over, 8.5 or higher, the under, 927, 928 on the card. The St. Louis Cardinals, they are on the road against the Tampa Bay Rays as Miles Michaelis is on the bump for St. Louis, and Adrian Don't Call Him Doogie Howser is on the bump for the Rays. The Rays are between minus 125 to minus 132 favorites, plus 108 to plus 115 in center around St. Louis. 9 is the total, the under is minus 120, and the over is even. And for the Rays, I set them at a minus 148. I'm going to be willing to lay the money line. Now for Adrian Howser, we have seen things toilet bowl for him a little bit ever since he got traded to the Tampa Bay Rays, as with the Chicago White Sox, he was absolutely tremendous with a 210 ERA, but he did have a 332 fielding independent with only 6.2 strikeouts per 9 innings. He knew that there was some inevitable regression with the White Sox. He was only giving up a half home run per 9 innings and still below 0.75 home runs allowed per 9 innings this season. He has, with his 3 starts with the Rays, posted up a 5.17 ERA. Do think that he might be doing for some positivity, though. Goes up against the Cardinals lineup that since the beginning of the month of July have been in the bottom 5 of the big leagues in terms of runs per game, as you just don't have a lot of hardcore power on this team. As Wilson Contreras is up to 17 home runs, he's giving you about a 345 on base, and then you've got 15 bombs out of Alec Burleson. But now you've got Brandon Donovan, one of your best guys in terms of getting on base, out of 350 on base, currently on the injury list. Nolan Arenado has been out for quite some time, and the young guys just have not really stepped up for this team, as you've got a whole bunch of guys like Pedro Páez, Jordan Walker, Victor Scott, Nolan Gorman. These guys running between about a 219 to a 229 for Gorman. 12 home runs at about 250 at-bats, but not really giving you a lot in terms of average. And for the St. Louis Cardinals, this has been a pretty solid bullpen even without Ryan Helsley. And at this point, they might not want Ryan Helsley with the way that he's been pitching for the New York Mets. But that said, the likes of Kyle Leahy, Jojo Romero, Matt Svanson, these guys have been able to give you a sub-325 ERA. Andre Granillo has given up some runs, but on all these guys have been solid. And for the Tampa Bay Rays, this continues to be a top-10 team in terms of their bullpen ERA, as well as you've got Pete Fairbanks along with Garrett Clevenger give you sub-320 2.25 ERA. You've had Ian Seymour be able to step up as a little bit more of a long guy as well. And for the Rays, getting back Brandon Lau in the lineup is big. 24 home runs, hitting at 270. Junior Caminero doesn't really draw a lot of walks, but he's up to 35 bombs. Yandy Diaz has been stuck on 20 home runs for quite a while, but he's continued it, a 280. And this is one of the best base-stealing teams in all of baseball. Chandler Simpson hits for a 300 with 36 stolen bases. Now the bottom of the lineup, Taylor Walls, Christopher Morello, the catcher spot, owing at 225 or lower, has been a little bit less than savory, but I do think that they can get to a guy, Miles Michaelis, just giving up a lot of contact in general. 5.9 strikeouts per 9 innings. He's given up 1.5 home runs per 9 innings. He does a good job of not giving up a lot of walks, but 4.99 ERA out there in what I think is going to be a pretty warm stadium on Friday. I do think that the Rays get to him and get the job done. Sub by total 9.4, so I like that 9 over, and I do like the money line here of the Rays. I was willing to lay up to a minus 147, and we're wrap things up with 9.29, 9.30 on the card. It is the Cubs, and they're going to be on the road against the LA Angels. Boy, did they make my job fun here, as it's to be determined against to be determined. So this game is completely off the board. Now, the CBS projection is Ben Brown going against Tyler Anderson, and if you get this, I set the Cubs at a minus 135, and I set a total 9.7. Now, with Tyler Anderson, if you do indeed get him, which it looks like we should be getting Tyler Anderson, I think the bigger question mark is what the Cubs do here. But for Anderson, this has been a guy that's been doing for regression for years. He's giving up over 1.7 home runs per 9 innings. He's honestly lucky that his ERA has not touched above a 5. Like, this guy has been absolutely terrible this far this season. He's given up 3.5 walks per 9 innings. He's getting fewer than 8 strikeouts per 9 innings. This guy has been a lucky SOB for a very, very long time. And at home, he's given up 14 home runs at 63 2/3 innings. Not great there. Now, the Cubs are right now lining up Ben Brown. I have some question marks there. And if you do get Ben Brown, he's probably going to be utilized as a bulk guy. This will probably be some sort of a mix and match game with him. Maybe you throw out there someone else. It can't be Mike Soroka because he is currently on the injured list. But that said, I do think that they're probably going to be getting a little bit creative with this. And for Ben Brown, if you do indeed get him in this spot, he's got a 5.91 ERA. I believe that he's doing for a little bit of positivity. He has been getting over 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings. This will be his first time pitching since Sunday when he went 2 2/3 innings in a win against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And in that game against the Pittsburgh Pirates, and I do recognize that the Cubs had to utilize a lot of pitchers with that mix and match game, they were also trotting out their Javier Assad as well. And Javier Assad got sent down to the minor league level. I'm not quite sure why, but he got sent down to the minor league level, which is why you're currently lining up Ben Brown. But I said, this is a Cubs bullpen that is still in the upper halves of the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Got a lot of guys like Taylor Rogers, Caleb Theobar, Daniel Palencia, Brad Keller, who've all been able to give you a sub-325 ERA. Ryan Brazier has been a little bit of a disaster, and you just never know what you're going to be able to get outside of these mix and match guys. They've got Ryan Presley back on the injury list. That's not necessarily a bad thing with the way that he's been performing. And for the Cubs, this continues to be a top five offense in terms of run scoring. Has been a little bit cold recently, but I am facing off against Tyler Anderson should be a nice elixir to that. Say Suzuki, Pico Armstrong have been stuck on 27 home runs for quite some time. I do think that they're going to be able to bust out a little bit more. Now, they sent up their young gun in Owen Cassie, and he was very big in that series against the Milwaukee Brewers, so love to be able to see that. Carson Kelly with the Miguel Amaya injury, he's playing a lot more catcher. His home run power has been going down, but he continues to give you a 360 on base. Kyle Tucker has been able to give you a 370 on base. He's up to 18 bombs. Michael Bush, 24 bombs, 340 on base, 1-9. You're just very rock solid. And Matt Shaw, since the All-Star break, has been hitting well above a 275, so that's been very encouraging. And for the Angels, it's an all-or-nothing team. They're in the bottom 8 in the big leagues in terms of on-base percentage, and they're in the top 8 with regards to home runs on a per at-bat basis. As a matter of fact, they're in the top 5 in terms of home runs on a per at-bat basis, with Taylor Ward leading the way, 29 home runs, 320 on base. Joedel's up to 28 home runs, but he's only hitting a 232. And then you've got our good friend Logan Ohapi. He is the just modicum of this. 18 home runs at a 268 on base. Like even Mike Trout, 20 home runs, but he's only hitting a 241, albeit a 373 on base. Zach Neto's moved the line. He's hitting for about a 270 with 21 home runs. But here's a big issue that you've got for the LA Angels. For one, Luis Renifo giving you 7 home runs at a 297 on base, but his bullpen continues to be in the bottom 7 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. You've got two guys in Kenley Jansen and Brock and Roll Burke both give you a 3 ERA or better, but Hunter Strickland is now on the injury list, which means that you've got a lot of guys with over a 4 ERA out there. Sam Bachman, Carson Fulmer, Ryan Zephyrian, Connor Brogdon, if I didn't mention him already, Jose Fermin. A lot of these guys just have not been able to get the job done for this bullpen, so I do think that you're looking at a higher scoring game. 9.5 or less, looking at the over 10 or higher, the under for the Cubs. Set them at a minus 135 on the money line, or if you can get a plus +117 or better, we'll be looking at their run line. We need at least +136 to take a shot on Anderson and the Angels, and that'll wrap things up for the Friday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Matt Joseph, aka Major Matt, for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from the Stein Podcast Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you'll find out two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like here on this podcast via that 5-star review. And I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast throughout the regular season into the postseason, so I'll be back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you.